Good evening, this is Henry Banks, senior producer and host of People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on the show today, election season is upon us all over America. Anika Robbins of Black Votes Matter. She's also the executive director of the Anika Foundation and a member of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission. She joins us in the WPR studios to talk voting, voting registration, early voting, why it's important to vote, and more. Also, we'll hear from individuals representing the differently abled community and why they believe all voters must cast their ballots in this year's election. All of this and more coming up next on People of Color with Henry Banks after this news. Welcome to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. Thanks for joining us this evening. I have some awesome people in the studio today, but first I'm going to introduce Michaela Lampert. She is our newest intern working on People of Color, and I just want to welcome you, and you want to say something to our listeners, right?
Yes. Hello. Thank you. Like Henry said, my name is Michaela Lampert. I'm a Writing Studies and Sociology double major at UMD, University of Minnesota Duluth, and I'm just really excited to be here and working with you and seeing all the things that you do. So.
Thank you, and yeah. We're very honored that you're with us.
Thank you.
I am so honored at this time to welcome to the People of Color show Anika Robbins. She is the executive director of the Anika Foundation, and she is also the founder of Black Votes Matter. And you're going to be learning more about her and her work in the Twin Cities and all over the country. Anika, thank you for taking the time to be with us on the show today. We are so honored to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
So as I was doing research, I might as well just let our listeners know just a little bit more about this wonderful woman who is in our studio today. She is on the Commission on Civil Rights in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In fact, she is the chairperson of that body. About 20, almost 20 people serve on that body representing different aspects and different neighborhoods and wards in the Twin Cities. Before we get to our conversation, can you talk about your role on that commission?
Thank you so much. So I should clarify, I'm not the chair of the commission in its entirety, but I do chair two subcommittees, the Contract Compliance Committee and the Public Relations and Engagement Committee. And so with PR&E, our goal is to just make sure that members of the community are aware that the commission exists and understand that it's basically a free litigation service that is offered by the city should anyone experience discrimination. There's a process for people to file complaints. And so we've been engaged in a number of community events this summer just trying to increase awareness and elevate the profile. And then with contract compliance, it's really about increasing contracting and grant awards, opportunities for underrepresented businesses, particularly for women and minority-owned businesses. And so, you know, we know that the city in Minneapolis has millions of dollars that it spends on projects every year, but there are some disparities there. And so we're working with various groups to make sure that we bring things up to par, to make sure that we open things up so that more businesses of color and all of the protected classes are able to access those opportunities.
So how does this commission compare to, say, the Human Rights Commission in Duluth? Similarities?
There are some similarities. And same also with St. Paul. St. Paul has a Human Rights Commission as well. The focus is slightly different, but the same. It's rooted in civil rights, but more on human rights. That's the extent of what I know, but I do know that they're focused on trying to increase equity across the board, and that's the thing that all of them have in common.
Okay. Yeah. And the city of Superior, Wisconsin, just recently started, about 6 months ago, a commission on communities of color.
Really?
Yes, and
oh,
they're in their sixth month. They're
oh, that's fantastic.
So, okay. So there is some movement going on
there
up
is.
In the northern part of the country, if you
that's
will.
That's great.
So We're here today to talk about voting, really, because this is the voting season. And if you would take a moment and talk about why it's important to vote, why it's important for marginalized people to get out and vote.
Thank you. I love to talk about this. You know, it's very important for people to engage. And I know it, that sounds very cliche, and that's the reason why we founded Black Votes Matter. We came into being on the heels of the Jamar Clark murder in Minneapolis at the hands of Minneapolis police. And what we found is that there is a large disconnect between what happens in communities and people understanding what resources they have, what recourse they have, how to channel their grievances, how to become engaged, where do you take those grievances? And we're always telling people vote, you know, and we're always directing them to vote for someone. And we haven't really done a good faith effort in connecting people to their why, their reasons for voting. So for a lot of folks, what we found in doing this work for over 3-4 years now is that people are really concerned with their immediate needs. So like taxes, childcare, healthcare, access to, you know, good transportation, clean, healthy water. And so these are the issues that matter to the folks that we engage on a regular basis. So the goal for us is to connect people to their why, and their why are those everyday things of that influence and impact their families, their lives, their ability to find work. And so when we make those connections, then we're able to connect people to the reasons why it's important to become more involved in their communities through voting. So, you know, we used to say, oh, your ancestors died for your right to vote. That doesn't really resonate with millennials, you know. So, and a lot of people are turned off by government. But our message is that's exactly the reason why you should engage. You know, if things aren't working the way you'd like them to, or if you don't feel like your issues are being heard, voting is probably the most direct way for you to be able to make some change. So we're a leadership policy advocacy organization. We're nonpartisan, but our goal is to help people understand the process and understand how to navigate that process and demystify it, because there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of big language and a lot of like policies and things that really, you know, it's hard sometimes to wrap our minds around. And so our goal is to really simplify it and make it so that people can understand it and feel empowered to become more engaged with it. So whether that's voting, whether that's attending city council meetings or civil rights commission meetings, or even neighborhood association meetings. So it's really about showing people how to become engaged, to see, to make things happen. And we've seen recently that when people start to engage, they feel more powerful. They feel more like they had a role in it. They feel more vested. And so it encourages them to deepen their engagement. And so like in Minneapolis, the last election, we saw with just a little bit more increase in voter turnout, our city council is now the most diverse that it's ever been, right? We saw the election of 3 African-Americans, 2 transgender, some Latino members of our community, Somali and Eritrean. And it's the first time that it truly represents the real fabric of Minneapolis. And then, of course, the first African-American mayor was voted in St. Paul.
In St. Paul, yes.
Yeah. So
that's really cool.
It was all exciting, you know. But voter turnout is low in communities of color. And so that's the other reason why we're here, is to encourage people to reclaim their power through voting. And so far, so good.
So I don't know if you were aware of what just happened in the Duluth City Council chambers.
I heard.
But that was a clear example of when people from all walks of life and backgrounds come together to say, hold up a little bit here.
Yes.
We don't want you to just go in and vote on something that we believe is against our best interest.
That's right.
And so the folks showed up. They spoke out, and the city council listened to them. And that was a 5-3 vote.
Yes, Salam, and I want to shout out Salam because I know she was there championing that as well. And that's important. That's an example in a real way of what happens when people show up. You know, we've had elected officials tell us, well, you know, people don't come. We don't know how they feel on these issues. So it's important for us to show up and to be consistent at it. So that's sometimes where we fall short, is that we don't come all the time, or we only get kind of riled up around certain hot button topics, and then it dies down, and then, you know, we fade out until the next big issue. But the key is to stay engaged. The key is to develop relationships with your elected officials. Your face should be familiar to them. And bring five friends.
Absolutely. Always bring five friends, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a great example of that. I was really excited to hear it. And I hope that folks in Duluth Superior continue to do that.
Absolutely. So yeah. I'm here with Anika Robbins. She is the executive director of the Anika Foundation and founder of Black Votes Matter in the Twin Cities. She goes all over the country helping people, working with people, especially in the area of voting and voting rights. She's also on the Commission on Civil Rights in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Again, I'm so honored that you're here. I want to go right into this question of why are our people, communities of color in particular, so disappointed?
Sure.
Why are we staying away from the polls?
Sure.
And really, how can we as a community, as a region, as a nation, get folks of color back into voting?
That's a great question. We've been in it, and we hear it, boots on the ground. We hear the frustration. We hear the disappointment, the dejection. And, people of color have historically felt disconnected, disenfranchised in this country, and to some degree still feel like second-class citizens. And a lot of the things that people on the streets tell us is that, you know, why vote? It doesn't matter. Nothing's going to change. Our votes don't matter. You know, they say it does, that it doesn't, or people only come to our neighborhoods when they want our vote. Mm-hmm. And I think, but that's not just in communities of color.
That's right.
Yeah, it's that's like right. There's just really this kind of malaise, the spirit of discontent around the country. People are just turned off by politics in general. And this goes for Black, white, everybody, because there's just a level of distrust for elected officials. And that's not the way it should be, because when you really think about it, elected officials are paid for by taxpayers, you, the citizens. So really the power lies with you. And so that's really the message that we've been kind of just drilling in day after day, is that staying away doesn't help, right? So we saw that in 2017. It doesn't help. If anything, you make way for more of the opposite of what you want. And so participation is key. I always say voting is the most underutilized power tool. And so if everyone cast their vote, they would see more of a change in their communities. And you can advocate for those services that you need. I can't really say it any other way, but we were in it. You know, we lost ambassadors. We have ambassadors that help us carry out this voter registration and engagement work, because it was just overwhelming, you know, just the amount of, you know, people just not caring, not wanting to hear about it. And then over time, though, it's a thing of where you have to see it work. And so I think if people see it work more, then that will help connect them more. So we saw that in Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. And we saw what the power of Black women's votes does.
That's right.
And so, and then just in Georgia and in Massachusetts and in some of the other states where there were gains, where more people of color were being voted into office. And so I think when people start to see the tide change a little bit, they perk up more and they get more excited about it, because it's really about representation, right? So when you feel like you're represented, not that you want to take over, but it's about feeling like your voice does count and that there's someone, at least one person, who's representing you and championing your issues, then that's where we start to see kind of this, wow, it felt good. We've been seeing this on social media. People are starting to kind of warm up to the ideal. They feel proud of themselves for voting. They feel like their vote mattered. And so just those small strides, and again, with Birmingham, I mean, Alabama, you know, major strides, great things can happen. And that's for any community in the U.S. If you want your candidate in there, if you want your issues to be to advance, the best way to do it is to show up.
That's right. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to People of Color. I'm here again, honored to be with Anika Robbins from the Twin Cities. She is on the Commission on Civil Rights in that city. Also, she's the executive director of the Anika Foundation and founder of Black Votes Matter. Just wonderful to have you in our community and in our region. I'm going to go right to this question as it relates to returning citizens, those who have done their time and they're no longer on paper, but they still think they can't vote. Would you help my listeners, myself, understand what rights these individuals have with regard to voting?
Yeah, that's a big issue in our state right now. So currently, if you have completed all aspects of your sentence, and this is on a felony conviction, I need to really clarify that, this is on a felony conviction, then you absolutely regain your voting rights. The problem we're seeing is that a lot of the POs, probation officers, are not communicating that with folks. So we had an instance where an older gentleman, older black man who had moved here, moved to the Twin Cities some 20 years ago, and he hadn't voted in that amount of time. And we were doing voter registration outside of a grocery store, and you know, he said, "Don't play with me. Are you serious? Are you for real?" And I said, "Yes, you can absolutely." You said 20 years ago. You can absolutely vote. And he started to cry. And I started to cry. But the point is that for those who don't have it, they understand the value of the right to vote. And so it's important for people to understand that as soon as they've completed all elements of their sentencing, that they do have it back. However, there are those who, you know, if their license gets revoked, and there's several, so there's about 40,000 people in the state of Minnesota that are impacted by some of these draconian laws. And so there are different organizations that are working with that, including the ACLU. There's the Restore the Vote initiative led by my dear friend, Anika Bowie.
Oh, another Anika.
Another Anika.
There we go.
Yes. And so they are leading the charge to make, to expand voting rights, because folks should be able to vote. And we know the reasons why they're not allowed. It's a, yet another way, no different than the poll tax and the literacy tests of the 50s and 60s, that is used to bar people from accessing their civil rights. So, yeah.
So there's that.
There's that.
So still navigating that,
yes,
is important.
We're still navigating.
So what about early voting?
Oh yes.
You know, I'm finished. I've already voted.
Oh, I love it.
I was the very first person to vote absentee at the clerk's office in Duluth, Minnesota. So I felt really proud about that.
Okay, we got to get a picture of that. Okay.
So can you talk about early voting and the importance of going to the clerk's office to make that happen?
Absolutely. So today is National Voter Registration Day. And then early voting started September 21st. Mm-hmm. And so people can basically vote anytime now through November 5th, right? And you can still register to vote the day of the election. And I do want to stress that you can do that. You would need to bring like a utility bill or a neighbor to vouch for you, basically. But there's absolutely no reason why you can't vote. You should vote. I encourage early voting, a.k.a. absentee
balloting,
voting.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But it kind of started off as a way for folks who were away serving in the service in the armed forces to be able to cast their ballot. But now it's a great opportunity. If you're busy, you have a lot going on, you want to avoid the long lines on election day, depending on where you are, early voting is great. The only thing I would say is just make sure you really research your candidates. Take your time, Google them, research them. Go to their website, but Google's great because you learn the history and some
That's
other
right.
details. And
right.
we just want to make sure people are making an informed decision, because what happens a lot of times is people get to the polling station and like, who are these people? What issues do they represent?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I've never really heard of this person. And what is the soil and water conservator?
Absolutely, because that's on there. That's on the ballot. That's always
and,
seems to be on the ballot.
It always is there. And so what we encourage people to do is to, you can visit the Secretary of State of wherever you are, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and pull up your ballot, because it's going to vary by your zip code, by your address, right? So type in your zip code, your address, pull up the ballot for your area, and look up these folks. These are the people that are saying they want to work for you. They want your tax dollars to support their salary. So research them. Become acquainted with their issues and make sure, you know, if they align with yours. But so early voting is happening now. So usually the hours are from like 8 or 9 to about 4, 4:30. There are a few locations I think have Saturday hours, but all things which can be looked up online. Cities and counties are hosting early voting sites. So like in Minneapolis, the city of Minneapolis has an early voting location. And then the county has several offices around the state where you can go and cast your vote early. And so for Duluth, I believe it's the same. So you want to make sure, and Superior. And
yes,
so just
it's
nationwide.
Yes.
So just make sure that you, because there's some city ones and then there's county ones, but either way, more options is mm-hmm. what it means for you. So definitely take advantage of that. But please note, your job, your employer cannot stop you from going to vote. So you might say, oh, I can't get off work, I'm busy. Your employer cannot dock your pay. They can't stop you from going. They can't, like, all of a sudden overwhelm you with a bunch of stuff. Like, they have to allow you that time, and they have to pay you for that time. So,
and that is law.
That is the law.
That is the law.
Yes. And so just know that, because I know sometimes people have said, oh, I can't get off work. It's absolutely not the case. And if your if you have problems with your employer, the Secretary of State in your state will let you know what the remedies are for that. And trust me, your employer doesn't want those kind of problems.
Exactly, exactly. You know, Duluth is actually coming up with an event on Saturday, October 13th. Mm-hmm. It's called Souls to the Polls, a Get Out the Vote Festival. And earlier you mentioned Salam Witherspoon.
Yes.
And Salam is doing a great job in providing some leadership
yes.
to make this event happen. There's probably 20 or 25 different organizations yeah. involved in making this happen. There's going to be 2 or 3 bands.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be 2 of our local news people, Edward Moody and Ramona Morosas, who are persons of color.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be co-emceeing the event. It's going to be held at Denfeld High School, 4405 West 4th Street, starting at 1 p.m. And it's open to the public because this, again, as you mentioned, nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
This is a nonpartisan mm-hmm. event. Everybody's welcome to attend.
That's right.
Are you coming up for it?
It's on my calendar, you know, and as you know, we're working with the Council of Minnesotans of African Heritage.
They will be here.
Yes,
they're
they will be
the
here.
Area.
So we, you know, our goal, so in Black Votes Matters partnered with them to lead a statewide strategy to engage all the various communities across the state to make sure folks are getting to the polls early, or at least making a plan to vote. I think that's really important. So whether you choose to vote early or wait until Election Day, as long as you have that time set aside, it's really important. But we have this included on our calendar of events.
I should tell you, our headliner band is Boku Frequency.
Okay.
They are a Chicago-style blues, funk, soul band.
Oh, so now I really have to come.
They are really good, and you don't want to miss them.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're coming to this, they will be the highlight of the evening, the afternoon. There's going to be lots of food.
Absolutely.
You know, so we're going to pay this forward, really, to make sure that people that come to the event also have something to eat.
That's fantastic.
And that's very important as
That's fantastic. No, this is a great event. It's been great to see how things have been coming together. And I know here, folks in Rochester, St. Cloud, you know, we have an event down in the Twin Cities called First Fridays at the Polls.
Yes, I saw that.
And so there's you know, a lot of energy around this. And this is an important election. This is the governor's race.
That's right.
You know, this is like 40 billion... Let me not get my millions and billions. A lot of money is at stake with this election. Governors dictate how funding, how resources get allocated, and that can mean the difference between early child care, more transportation, more development, health care, all of those things. So this is not the election that you want to sit out. This is the one you definitely want to engage in. You know, there's county attorneys, county commissioners. So they distribute, you know, public assistance, the jails, sentencing. When you talk about how does voting really matter, these are the types of things that these individuals will be responsible for. And it can have impact for 4 to 20 years. So we want to make sure that wherever you stand on the issues that you're voting, you're making a responsible decision about who you're voting into office, because you're putting the lives of your children, your families, your communities into their hands, and you're entrusting them that they're going to make the best decisions for you and your community. So we absolutely encourage you to get out and vote.
Welcome back to People of Color. I'm here with Anika Robbins. And a couple of times you've mentioned transportation.
Yeah.
I want to say that so folks know, I come clean on all things, right? I am a Duluth Transit Authority director on the board. Serve as an officer.
So
you're
a celeb too.
Well, I don't like to think of myself as that. I just like to do the work of the people
exactly.
And make sure it gets
Likewise,
done.
Yeah.
And we're going to be voting this week in our board meeting whether or not to make November 6th a free fare ride.
Okay.
For our entire system to make sure that we reduce the barriers for people getting to the polls. This is a nonpartisan vote, and so I'm hoping the board members believe and acknowledge that this is important to do.
I think that's a great measure. We've seen that in a few other cities. I think it would be monumental if you can pull that off. I don't see why not.
Mm-hmm.
We're really only talking about for a few hours.
That's right.
But we know that transportation is often a barrier for folks getting to the polls, particularly senior citizens. And so we want to make sure that we remove those barriers for people being able to cast their ballots. So I think that's great work.
So thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So earlier also, because I want to focus on this, you mentioned millennials. And so I work with a lot of young people.
Mm-hmm.
And so would you say something here today to encourage our young folks to get out and vote?
Absolutely. I would say you are the future. But you are. And, you know, the millennials actually are giving older folks, which I am not.
No, you're not.
A run for their money. Very sharp, very aware of the issues, and have been very involved with movement building of their own. And so there's something to be said and acknowledged about that. I would say just continue with that. Don't burn out. Pick the issues that matter to you, focus on them, align yourself with organizations and issues that really matter to you, and run with it. But don't sit it out. Whatever you do, don't sit it out. And you're not going to know everything. A lot of us adults don't have it all figured out. But the key is to do your research, do your homework, and get out there. So what does get it out? What does get out there mean? Because we hear all these buzzwords. That means voting, making sure you're registered to vote. And then it also means doing your research on the candidates, on the political parties, because there's several. It's not just the red and the blue, right? But then also finding ways to get involved, whether that's through volunteering. So you can work on campaigns. You can work on nonpartisan campaigns. You can, volunteer in your community, in your neighborhood. Anything to help you become more aware of the various issues and understanding how your community works. Because here's what we don't want to have happen. We don't want you to feel disconnected from your community. We don't want you to feel disconnected from government. We don't want government to feel like this big beast. We want you to feel like you're a part of it and that you have a right to be a part of it. And that's the message. You know, we have a lot of youth programs in our high schools. Black Votes Matter has a junior ambassador program in high schools. We're identifying ambassadors in colleges and universities because we understand that sometimes adulting is complicated, right? And no one really has conversations with us when we were younger about how to become engaged. We kind of just saw it, and when things resonate, you kind of say, hey, that's not right. I'm going to get involved, and I'm going to make change, right? But being strategic, understanding the issues, aligning yourself with adults or other folks who are aware of the issues, pick something and then run with that, but always stay aware. I was going to quote a friend of mine, but I can't remember it, so I don't want to butcher it. But I would just say, don't sit it out. This is your government, too. These are your communities. It's important for you to understand how systems work now before you fully transition to adulthood, so that when you do become an adult and paying taxes, that you're not blindsided. Well, you're going to be blindsided anyway.
Oh, you're going to be paying, and you're going to be paying taxes too. So
you
need to get involved in the election and the electoral process.
Yes.
So, you know, we're going to be doing on another segment of the show, we're going to have some folks in who are from the differently abled community talk about voting and the importance of voting also.
Absolutely. So, I mean, everybody has a right to participate. Don't let anyone tell you different or intimidate you or make you feel like you have to have a certain degree of education, because there's a lot of that, or your class or income. Everybody has a right to not only vote and get involved, but also to run for office. And so that would be the other message that I would share with millennials or anybody. If you have a desire to serve and to make change, definitely consider running for office. You don't have to be an attorney to do it, but consider it. And you could start, you know, those of you that were on student government, consider running for city council for your neighborhood association. That's great training ground. Serve on a board or a commission, volunteer for an organization, learn the ropes, and then start figuring out what your platform is. But don't let anyone tell you that you can't run and serve your community, because it's a right that all of us have.
Well, that's just wonderful information. Is there anything else you want to leave with our listeners that can really inspire them to get out, get registered, and get out to vote?
That's it.
That's it, right?
Yeah. I would just invite folks to visit our website, www.blackvotesmattermn.com. And like our Facebook page, we share lots of updates with different events happening around the country. We don't just promote Minnesota, because it's really about being aware about what's going on around the world. And the thing is, change is happening everywhere. We see women's rights is shifting. Immigrant rights are shifting. Like right now, America, the world is going through a shift. and we feel it. And the shift is going to become more uncomfortable. We can't run from it. We run from our issues a long time. We're a diverse country who's trying to make peace with itself.
That's right.
And so I would say it's exciting, it's daunting, it's all kinds of crazy things. But you know what? In 2015, women in Saudi Arabia won the right to vote.
Yes, they did.
In 1920, here in the U.S., women won the right to vote. And so, but they couldn't buy their own property until the 70s. That's a whole other story. But at any rate, the point is we have the right to vote. Use it.
Thank you so much. Anika Robbins, oh my God, thank you for taking
thank
the time
so
to be here. Anika is the executive director of the Anika Foundation and founder of Black Votes Matter, also a commission member on the Commission on Civil Rights in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Again, we are honored that you've taken the time to be on People
it's
of Color
pleasure.
With Henry Banks. Have a great evening and a great weekend.
Thank you.
Don't forget, October 11th from 6 to 9 at the Robert Paulus Cultural Center, which is at 212 West 2nd Street in Duluth. There's going to be a celebration open to the public. So bring a dish and we'll discuss the important issues facing Indigenous communities today. Topics will deal with colonizing our thoughts and actions and helping to elevate Indigenous visibility through the city of Duluth. So don't forget, October 11th from 6 to 9 at ICO.
Hello, this is Henry Banks, and you're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. Up next, we'll hear about voting rights and disability issues with Rich Skirbitz, John Nosain, and Steve Carlson. The three work for North Country Independent Living in Superior. The organization helps to empower people living with disabilities in an 8-county area in northern Wisconsin, including Douglas, Ashland, Bayfield, and Burnett counties. The three sat down in our studios recently to talk about the upcoming election.
Rich, are you going to vote in this election this fall, and why?
I am going to vote in this election, and this is one of the most, in my opinion, one of the most important things that we do as citizens.
Okay, what do you think the single most important issue to you this election season?
Well, one of the things that I want to talk about is the voting accessibility and the right to vote for people with disabilities. One of the information is about the voting ID and what you need to bring, and I just wanted to give a couple of websites so that you can just do some research a little bit beforehand and make sure that the polls are accessible and make sure that you have the needed documentation to vote. And you can go to myvote.wi.gov or www.bringitwisconsin.com, and it'll give you a list of acceptable IDs for voting. And if you need help with that, you can call North Country Independent Living as well.
Can you give us some examples of what you do need to vote?
Some of the examples of the types of acceptable photo ID is a DOT-issued driver's license, DOT-issued identification card, certificate of naturalization. Also, you can get a free state ID if you call the DMV. And
tribal IDs, I think, are acceptable, too.
Yes, and tribal IDs,
Okay, Rich, can you tell us why it's important for people with disabilities in particular to vote?
There's a lot of issues that reflect and affect people with disabilities. One of our sayings is nothing about us without us. And if you don't raise your voices on the issues that affect you, then your voices won't be heard. And some of the examples that affect people with disabilities are public transportation, inaccessibility of public transportation, not enough public transportation, personal care assistance, and there's a whole lot of areas that cover around that. Accessibility in general, employment opportunities, health coverage, and benefits for people with disabilities.
I know also that They have voting machines that are accessible. So even if you can't write, there are machines now that you can vote and your privacy is protected. And I know in the past, North Country has gone around to the different voting sites. I know I used to use the machine, even though I don't need it, just to see that it was in working order and stuff. And the poll workers are very, very good about accommodating people with disabilities. So for sure, get out there and vote.
Do you feel like your elected officials reflect you in your community?
I've actually been pretty good about Janet Bewley, Nick Milroy, and Beth Myers represent North Country's 8-county service area. And they have been receptive to my inquiries to them and my opinions to them. They don't always agree with them, but they've always listened really well. I'm also in constant contact with Baldwin and Johnson and Duffy, our representative. The farther, I guess, they are away from being local, the less you hear from them. You do get responses once in a while.
What's the single most important issue to you in this election?
Well, there's a lot of them, so it's hard to say the single most important one, but transportation. Transportation in northwestern Wisconsin is a really tough nut to crack. There's very few places that have public transportation. Superior is one that does have mainline and paratransit. We have enhanced the paratransit system. Anybody else in Douglas County is going to have a really hard time finding a ride. There is non-emergency medical transit, NEMT. That's handled by a company called MTM, which is an out-of-state company. They're a broker of transportation. We have a lot of consumers that call us and they say the ride doesn't show. It's really hard to get the ride. And that system has been not real responsive ever since we started it. They had a different provider for a while. We are trying to work with them on other brokerage systems that might work. North Country does have a voucher program. However, it's underfunded. We have no more funding. And that's one where a volunteer driver can transport somebody to anything they want. NEMT transportation is only medical stuff. But all the public kind of transportation that we can get will benefit people, but in particular people with disabilities. So it comes down to money for transportation. Steve, are you going to vote in this election this fall and why?
I vote in every election, whether it's in the fall primaries, spring elections, and even special elections. I think it's absolutely crucial that those folks, whether they're people with disabilities or not, we all need to get out and vote on a regular basis.
What would you say is an important issue in this election season?
Well, an issue that I've worked on prior to coming to North Country was the Medicaid expansion. That's been a big stumbling block here in Wisconsin. It has not only affected people with disabilities in terms of an inability to expand a program crucial to keeping folks with disabilities independent in the community, but it's actually contributed to the lack of the expansion has contributed to higher premiums for people buying policies on the open exchange. And I think what's really important to point out about that issue is that it clearly is not a partisan issue. 17 Republican governors around the country have taken the Medicaid expansion, some of them with conditions that do not entirely comport with the Affordable Care Act provisions. They've gotten special waivers to try different things. But actually, given the overall makeup of state legislatures around the country, more Republican governors have taken the expansion, one more, than Democratic governors. So it splits evenly along partisan lines, and it's something that the governor of Wisconsin, no matter who they are, can do at any moment without the legislature. So that is a key issue, and that's something a lot of different groups have been pushing for now for years, and I hope that we can keep up that kind of pressure.
Yeah, I know that disability advocates have been pushing for single payer now and things like that for a long, long time, and we will continue to push for that because the way we see it is that is the key. What's good for people with disabilities is good for everybody in general, and you don't get the cherry picking of one insurance company and the whole single or pre-existing conditions and all of that stuff. This also affects a lot of services for people with disabilities, in particular personal care.
Yeah, that's been that's another dimension of the Medicaid expansion that is maybe not recognized in terms of a solution. A lot of different trade organizations around the state, including the Personal Services Personal Care Services Association, have been calling for an increase in the Medicaid reimbursement rate, and it's acknowledged by most people to be the single biggest problem contributing to the personal care worker shortage crisis. And there is a crisis, and it given the demographics of the country, how we're rapidly aging, that crisis is only going to get worse. And raising wages is the single biggest issue there, not being able to pay people a living wage to do arguably the most important work in the country. And the way to raise those wages is to expand the money from available, in particular under the Affordable Care Act, and directing probably by statute the biggest portion of that increase to direct care workers. So I know that that's been on the Personal Care Services Association legislative agenda, and also the Survival Coalition has mentioned that as well. And that's, again, that's not a partisan issue. We're all getting older, and we're going to get old someday, and everybody's only one accident or illness away from a disability. And those services could be needed by a lot of people. So it's time that our legislative leaders down in Madison take some action on that issue.
Right. And as you know, it's also a border issue for us. Minnesota's reimbursement rate for those types of services is a lot higher than Wisconsin. So providers on this side of the bridge have a hard time competing with that and keeping employees. We did get a minor increase, and I know North Country and I imagine some of the other service providers have passed that on directly to the personal care workers, even though we also need more administrative funds. But, yeah, it's a big problem, and it's even amplified, as are a lot of things, as a border issue between Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Just one more thing about that I think is noteworthy. The Survival Coalition, WISCELC, Wisconsin Coalition of Independent Living Centers, asked gubernatorial candidates of both parties and also Libertarian and Green Party 7 questions regarding issues of priority concern to people with disabilities about Medicaid expansion. And Senator Vinehout, Kathleen Vinehout from the 31st Senate District, reported that after digging into the budget, she saw a 10% increase, cost of living increase, to the HMOs that administer Medicaid and Forward Health Badger Care programs. And yet, direct care providers only got a 2% increase. So, I mean, there are some solutions handy in the budgeting process right now that are within the governor's purview to do something about. And I just wanted to make note of that quick.
Yeah, and the Survival Coalition, for the listeners out there, if you want to see how gubernatorial candidates have opinions on some of these issues like long-term care, Medicaid, transportation, education, special education, mental health services, you can go to survivalcoalitionwi.org. That's survivalcoalitionwi.org. And you can see the responses from candidates, if that will help you make an informed decision with how to vote.
I'm just going to go ahead and put this to both John and Rich, because you've both worked in the independent living field for a lot longer than I have. Now, how do you think things have changed related to disability issues over time in the political arena?
Well, ever since I cut my teeth on disability rights with the Americans with Disabilities Act, and ever since that time, regardless of, people argue all the time about has it had a positive or a negative impact. And I think it put the issues of disability rights out there in front of everybody. Now people know, simply because of that act, even though it doesn't affect housing, when people are doing housing, they say, how does the ADA? We got to figure out the ADA. So at least it was a wake-up call to America, in my opinion, that we have to consider the concerns of people with disabilities. So before that, it was really tough to get anybody to really care. You know, if it doesn't affect them, and I'm the same way. I mean, it's human nature. I was not affected by any disability stuff until something happened to me. So I think that that awareness now that people recognize that there is a class of people, and that's people with disabilities, and they have issues and concerns that I need to address. So I think that has been the biggest plus. Also, I think slowly but surely, when we talk, as you guys know, when we talk about the issues that affect disability, it's that whole notion of disability in a negative view. Like, oh my God, this is the worst thing that could happen to you. This is the worst possible thing that could happen. And I know, you know, I'm a single leg amputee. I was injured in a construction accident when I was 24. And when I woke up in the hospital, I had some questions about, am I going to be able to do this stuff? A year later, that was not the biggest concern I had in my life. And it isn't today. So that disability experience teaches us that, you know, this is just a naturally occurring thing. And it's always going to be with us. It's always going to be with society. It's certainly nothing to be feared. And that that view of people with disabilities, that stigma that has followed people with disabilities, I think the best thing we can do as advocates is to alleviate that, because I think that drives the rest of the discrimination. I think it's that fear of disability, that view that disability is this terrible thing that could happen to you, as opposed to being judged by our abilities and what we can bring to the table and things like that. So I think it's changed over time. I don't think it's where it needs to be. But I think hopefully with advocates and for those people out there with disabilities, this is our charge. This is what we need to do. We need to change people's perceptions. So go out there and contribute to your communities. Go out there and be a positive force for change.
Again, you were just listening to Rich Skirbitz, John Nosane, and Steve Carlson. The three work for North Country Independent Living, and you can find out more about their organization online at northcountryil.org. That's northcountryil.org. Thanks for listening to People of Color on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Have a great evening and a great weekend.